Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Christopher Scott, and I'm here with Godfrey Spence. How are you, Godfrey?
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. What we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk a wee bit more about the aromas in wines, particularly the aromas that you get at the level two, and maybe just sort of start to untease what those aromas are. The nose is another has another gimme, isn't it? It's condition. It's clean or unclean.
Yes.
Have you ever? I had a corked wine actually. I had a tasting because the customer was supplying the wines, so I didn't get a chance to pre-taste it and check that they're all clean beforehand. So in the actual course, we had a corked wine,
which is great if you've got a spare bottle.
Not so good if you haven't.
Not so good if you haven't.
Yeah, but you can always use. To be honest, a corked wine to me is always a bonus because you can.
Yes.
You know, who cares if it's if you miss out on one wine? If you can learn what a corked wine tastes like, it's bonus.
Yes, but it is so much better if you have got a spare bottle, which, well, sometimes we have, sometimes we haven't. It's one advantage with some of my courses is I do them, you know, in the place where the stock is held. So if we get a corky wine, I can go and get another one. But
clean, unclean, it's always going to be clean unless something's gone horribly wrong.
Yeah,
And you never in an exam you'd never get an unclean wine.
No. And of course, in level two, as we said, there is no wine in the exam.
But
so on the course, it can happen. Arguably should happen. It's quite fun to have them.
Yeah, no, definitely. Intensity is one that a lot of people get a bit confused about because in level two, it's light, medium, or pronounced. Mm-hmm. I have a systematic way of sort of deciding if it's light, medium, or pronounced, but how do you normally define it?
Well, the one problem I have with that is always the first wine of the course. Or particularly the first wine of the day if you're doing a wine.
Because your nose is quite fresh and it's sensitive.
Your nose is quite fresh. It's the first time you've deliberately smelt anything. And let's face it, if you travel by tube or something, you probably spend your time not smelling things. And you get something like today, of course, started with agave.
Yeah.
Well, agave is light. But when it's the first time you've deliberately stuck your nose in a glass and smelt something, it seems more intense than it really is.
So should you just give the wine a bit of a sniff and then forget about it for it while you're maybe writing some notes and then come back to it and smell again?
Yeah, I always get people to keep that glass and come back to it after they've tasted, say, the Oaky Chardonnay or the Gewürztraminer or whatever it is that's afterwards and say, look, you said that was medium intensity first thing, now go back.
That's a good point. That is a good point. How do you define what pronounced is?
Well, if it's something like an aromatic white, like a New Zealand Sauvie or a Gewürz or a Muscat or something that's going to be pronounced, something like a lot of Italian white wines, you know, Trebbianos and so on, are light. Muscadet is light. There's always an argument of in the middle.
Mm.
You know, if you've got an oaky Chardonnay, is it pronounced or not? It's all just a question of finding the levels. What's your systematic approach?
What we do is you get them to pick up the glass and not swirl it, put their nose about 2 inches from the glass and smell
it. Can you smell it?
And if you can smell it quite strongly and clearly, then it's pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't smell anything, then you stick your nose in it and have a sniff. And if it comes through strongly then at level three, it's medium plus.
Medium.
Mm-hmm. And then if you've got to swirl it and then you get it quite strongly, then it's medium. And then if you...
working down that's quite a good
way of doing it, because otherwise you just there's no systematic way of doing it, otherwise you end up having to, you know, like say, well, this is an example and then this is an example,
but, yes,
and you've got to do it by examples, and I found that quite difficult to do.
Yes, you're relying on people's memory then to
do
it. Sounds a bit like my trip to Cognac where the guy who was doing one tasting said you start off, how this works with women I don't know. But you start off with a glass at the bottom of your tie, and you move it up slowly. And when you start smelling it, but that will give you some idea of the quality of the cognac. And the further down the tie, the better the cognac.
Okay.
Which is a slightly crazy way of doing it, but with cognac it probably works. I suppose it's a similar sort of thing with your sort of couple of inches from your nose and...
Okay. So would you agree then that if you got a couple inches, haven't swirled it, a couple inches, and you smell it quite strongly, that's fine for pronounced. And if you swirl it and you don't really smell anything, then it's light. And in the medium, you stick your nose in there and you smell it quite cleanly, then it's probably, without swirling it, it's probably medium. Okay,
that works. And some wines, if it is a Gewürztraminer or an Amontillado sherry or something, you can probably smell before you've even put it in the glass.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
As other people are pouring it.
Yeah, no, this is true. Some wines are pretty full on, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay, and then the last one is the aroma characteristics. Because a lot of people do struggle with aromas. I've been using a lot of the Nez de Vannes. So And when we go through the slides, if every time we see a grape variety at level two anyway, and we see it says melon and pineapple, I send the melon and pineapple around.
Relish.
You know, and the first couple of times it's great in that. And then after a while, they just get so used to the smells, they know what they're looking for, which I thought quite worked. But I had a guy once who's a perfumer. And we were talking about smells. And he was saying, you know, just start off with your animal, vegetable, mineral. It's some sort of plant material. Is it fruit? Is it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you just work your way through different trees. You know, so you've decided it's a fruit. Is it a soft fruit? Or
is
a stone
citrus fruit? Is it
citrus fruit?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a citrus fruit. Okay.
Now,
it's a citrus fruit. Is it lemon?
Orange, lemon,
whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that a good way?
That's the way I work. Yeah, so sort of start off with fruity, floral, spicy, whatever, and then drill down from there. You know, if it's fruity, what fruit?
Yep.
As I say, categories of fruit are useful for that. But those things are always going to be personal. Now, at level two, you're doing it, you're writing your notes for your own use.
Yeah.
So it's important that you use terms that mean something to you. Whether they mean anything to anyone else, frankly, doesn't matter that much.
Yeah.
Whereas level three and level four, you've got to write words that mean something to the examiner.
Yeah, and they're sort of pre-approved, really, aren't they? Because the examiner can only mark based on words that appear on the list.
You don't have to stick to those words.
Oh, no, you can write, but you have to write a note and explain why you're giving
points. Yes. Yeah, so there are other terms that can be used. But we have, I used to work for the WSET, and we got some wonderful tasting notes over the years, and one great one was the wine smelt of under grandma's bed.
Lovely.
Well, fine. Presumably that meant something to that particular candidate.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no idea what under that candidate's grandma's bed.
I think you'll find it was a Sauvignon Blanc. It smelled a bit like cat's.
it was actually a Gewürztraminer, so maybe...
maybe she had Worthing's rose pit yes. Or something.
I have done courses in lots of countries around the world, and you do get some very strange tasting notes from students. And somebody once told me a wine smelt of barley tea.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what barley tea tastes like. But
no, but if you're in Japan, you do.
Yeah. I suppose, yeah, that's the thing, is in some of the languages, it's country-specific, aren't they?
It's not just languages, but also what you're used to tasting. If the Swedish and Finnish students quite often come up with strange Arctic herbs that we never know about, but they use them in schnapps, so they know them as flavours.
Yeah.
Similarly, things like olive. If you do courses in Portugal or Spain or southern France, a lot of wines be described as smelling of black olives, which is just not a term we would use.
No, no.
But equally, gooseberry means nothing to them.
Yeah, and Americans don't really know what gooseberry is.
Americans have no idea.
They tend to use grapefruit as a synonym for gooseberry.
And South Africans, of course, gooseberries are a completely different plant.
Are they?
It's Cape gooseberry, the Physalis.
Oh, okay.
You know, the little orange thing about the size of a cherry that comes in a like a sort of paper lantern. Yeah. No, but you get them here in the supermarket.
No, not yet. I'll look out for them, though.
Yes.
I'll look out for it.
But, you know, not gooseberries like our green, sharp, aromatic gooseberries. So
some of
a lot of these things are regional.
Some of the flavours that in the level two, they start separating out the flavours from what comes from oak barrels and what comes from a bit of ageing and I think they even start talking about oxidative aromas as well.
Mm.
What are the classic oak barrel aromas?
Most of those, well, if anybody does carpentry, of course, they'll be familiar. But oak does have a very distinct smell.
Mm.
But that's all very well if you're a carpenter. And you cut up bits of oak or whatever, and I have, so I know. But typically, smoky flavours, vanilla, coconut if it's very charred.
Is it? Because I always associate coconut with American oak.
American oak particularly, which is usually quite often heavily charred as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes a nutty aroma. So the Burgundian Chardonnays tend to be more nutty than vanilla, sort of toasted hazelnuts and things.
Yeah. But is that an oxidative? Because I always think oxidative aromas, like I think of hazelnut as an oak flavour that's had oxidation.
Yes, it's sort of proper oak, if you like, rather than oak chips or staves. There is a touch of oxidation. Of course, I don't think we actually talk about it very much in level two. Comes in more on the level three and four.
Is it?
There are some wines which are quite deliberately oxidized.
Yeah.
Mostly fortifieds.
Yeah, and sherries. Yeah.
The occasional Tokais, but sherries, tawny ports, Madeiras.
Yeah, and they often have a nuttiness too, though.
Yes.
So would you say that often nuttiness is a generalization for oxidation processes, or would you say it's also an oaky process as well?
I think it's both, but in a different way. The oxidative nuttiness is a much stronger, much more powerful aroma than the nuttiness you get, say, in a Merceau or a Pulini.
Yeah, it's more intense.
Yes. Okay. But of course, the other oxidized wines we don't really cover in the syllabus. So something like Jura.
Yeah, Vingegaard.
Vingegaard and so on.
Okay, we'll worry about that. I don't think we need to add another
look.
What about spicy? Because the books often imply spices, as an oaky type aroma, but it's not always purely oak, because a lot of spices aren't necessarily, herbs and spices aren't necessarily oaky flavours.
No, quite. I mean, something like vanilla, obviously, is a spice, and that's an oaky-related thing. But a lot of grapes like Grenache might have or Northern Rhone Syrah might have a very strong peppery note.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, again, it's a spice, but that's a note from the grape rather than from the oak. So
cinnamon often comes from oak, though.
Cinnamon's quite often oak, yes.
And cloves is oak, and vanilla's oak. And the other ones that they have in the level two is ginger and nutmeg. I don't really...
Ginger you can get with really top-end ripe Viogniers quite often. And again, that's not an oaky thing. That's Viognier and it's...
Yeah, I often sometimes... And also some high sweet wines where the alcoholic fermentation has gotten to problems and you get a VA type thing and it catches the back of the throat, very ginger-like on the back of the throat from volatile acidity.
Yeah, something like an old Tokai or... Yeah.
Yeah, so I've seen that. And in fact... How was it? Herman Seyfried. Seyfried Wines and Nelson. His Sweet Angus, which is always wins the top sweet wine because he reckons he uses especially yeasts that do not create that VA type aroma. So he gets a very rounded wine as opposed to a lot of sweet wines do struggle and they do get that sort of catch on the back of the throat ginger note.
Yes, I find VA on sweet wines rather off-putting. Well, so it's quite...
Okay, so the ginger note isn't really a spice. It's a spice.
It's a spice.
And sometimes with Viognier, do you think that's a volatile acidity issue or is that more of a natural flavour in the wine?
I think it's part of the flavour, but it only seems to come at the sort of really high alcohol ones. So the top end, your Lumbers and Louisa Rose of your Lumber makes...
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, makes a range of Viogniers and at the sort of Oxford Landing end...
That's the bottom end.
You don't get much of it, but as you go up through the through the range, they're generally getting riper. They're small, lower yields, and generally much more alcoholic. And that
might be a VA type issue coming through. Then
might be VA. I think it's more the grape though, because she's pretty squeaky clean.
It's very fastidious. Okay, and we've talked about, they also talk about pungent spices like licorice and juniper. Juniper I often associate with gin more than I do.
Well, that's logical, yes. I can't recall finding juniper very much on wine.
No.
But
licorice I see a bit in, that's a spice I associate with oak though, is it?
Yes, so a lot of it's oak and again, very ripe red wines. So hot climate reds like perhaps Douro reds or again... Aussie Shirazes and things. And you get a sort of chocolatey, licoricey character there.
Moving down to some of the other flavours, they talk about autolytic characters. And autolytic characters are where the yeast breaks down So you've got yeast, the wine's in contact with the dead yeast, and then the yeast starts to, I tell people it's gross because it's decomposing basically into the
basically
wine.
Basically what's happening,
it's,
yes.
It's rotting in a way, and it's releasing these yeasty flavours into the wine. But you get a range of things like yeast, biscuit, bread, toast. See, toast I sometimes associate with smoky oakiness as well.
Yes, yes. I mean, toast comes into both really. You can get toasty flavours from oak and you can get toasty flavours from yeast.
And you can get toasty flavours from Old Simeon as well.
Yes. Hunter Valley. Yes, the old Simeon. The Hunter Valley Simeons.
Lovely,
weird stuff.
Oh, I love
them. I love it, but it just behaves in a weird manner.
Yeah.
It just does gets everything wrong, really, doesn't it? Yeah. So it's Australian. It's low alcohol. That's
ages
wrong
well.
As a start. It ages. But yeah, a lot of people will smell a traditional method sparkling wine and think they smell oak because they're smelling toast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And actually it's the yeast autolysis that's giving you the toasty flavours.
Yeah.
Very similar flavour, just from a different
source.
Different source.
Yeah. What about lees and pastry? Like lees is I've actually got in my Nez de Van kit the smell of lees, but it always smells of nothing. You know, it's very hard to unpick.
Is that one worn out? Is it?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I need to get a new kit.
Lees is fine as a tasting note, but not terribly useful for the average consumer, because unless you've actually been in a winery
and smelt it
there, or I suppose if you make your own bread, there's the smell of yeast in bread making is not dissimilar from the leesy character. And then the other side of yeast, of course, is the Fino Sherry yeast, which is not so much autolytic, but it's definitely yeasty.
Yeah, no, that's true, isn't it? It's more of a high note as well. Sherry is a yeasty note, but it's more piercing.
Yes,
that's the way I think. I often think of smells as similar to music. I'm not musical in any way, shape, or form. I can assure you of that. But my family's quite musical, so I've had a lot of music around me. I just don't know anything about it myself. But I often think of smells with a musical thing.
Yes, I think smells can have shapes.
Yeah.
Smells can have colours.
Yeah,
you can have spiky. A Sauvignon Blanc is spiky.
Yeah, it's piercing.
It's piercing, whereas a Chardonnay's a rounder, fatter smell somehow.
Yeah, exactly, so, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
That's not a systematic approach, so you won't get any marks for that on you.
No, get out. Okay. And thanks very much, mate.
Okay.
Cheers.